Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien.
Aaron O'Brien.
In the house.
Around the house. In your backyard.
Looking through them windows.
In your basement.
Aaron's in all those places because of what he does for work.
I'm a creeper, man.
A professional creeper.
Professional creeper. So hey, what's happening? We got some crazy Star Trek news that came out this week.
Crazy Star Trek news. The segment.
Yeah. So apparently Quentin Tarantino contacted J.J. Abrams about an idea for a Star Trek movie that he had and he was interested in doing. And I guess Abrams put together a writer's room to start hammering out what if that idea would work or any of those things. So I guess just kind of feel things out.
Yeah, and they're saying, I mean, nothing's official from CBS at all.
Or Paramount.
Nothing's official from Paramount at this point, but it's mostly just kind of talks between J.J. Abrams and Quentin Tarantino, but they're saying Quentin Tarantino is not going to write, but he is going to direct. These are all quote unquote, you know, like what they're saying, but they're going to make it rated R because Quentin Tarantino doesn't do anything that's not rated R apparently.
Sure.
And Patrick Stewart has always wanted to work with Quentin Tarantino apparently. So he's like, I'll play Picard again. You're going to put Picard in there? Could you please? I just want to be directed by Quentin Tarantino. Please and thank you.
Please, Quentin Tarantino, tell me what to do. Yeah, so, I mean, I get it. I get why Patrick Stewart would say I would definitely come back to that role as Jean-Luc Picard, you know, to work with Quentin Tarantino. But is that going to work? Because the J.J. Abrams Star Trek is still in Kirk's land. So, I mean, unless they shoot somewhere into the future or they bring Picard from the past, you know, I don't know how that would work.
It could be, or they could just go ahead and skip ahead and do a next-gen film. I wouldn't mind seeing what the Kelvin universe looks like 100 years in the future.
It would be interesting. I wonder how much it would be changed. The other thing is, I mean, it would be cool to see the part of Picard after, you know, all good things, like 20 years later.
That's funny, except he looks, like, in real life, he looks way younger than what he does.
He does, but you can tell he's aged. I mean, especially after seeing Logan. I mean, he's definitely aged quite a bit in the last, you know, probably 5 years. More so identifiable. But, I mean, he still looks great for his age. Jeez, I wish I look as good as him when I hit his age. So
I think they try to make him look more ragged in Logan, though.
Well, of course. I get that. But I don't know. If you see him now compared to who he was a couple of years ago, he's definitely getting older. So, I mean, it's like,
I mean, you could definitely tell him blunt talk, too. I mean, he's definitely getting older. It would be interesting to see him come back as Picard, but, like, man, they'd have to maybe do some de-aging on him if they want to do next gen era.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it. And I wouldn't, honestly, I wouldn't want to see next gen kind of, like, rebooted for any reason. I would like to see more next gen. Like continued, what happens afterward?
Sure, but I mean, if it's in the Kelvin universe, it's not really rebooted. It's just the future of the Kelvin universe.
Yeah,
Star Trek's already been rebooted. I mean, you could do any number of movies, you know, in the Kelvin universe. You could do Enterprise C movies with a whole new crew. You know, it doesn't have to be what we know. I mean, they could spin off the Kelvin universe to do whatever they wanted to. You know, honestly.
Or how about Kelsey Grammer and the Bozeman?
That would be great. Let's get Kelsey Grammer back.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
I'd love to see that.
I'd be down for that.
But that'd be cool to see. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other night, and I was saying, like, with this reboot, I mean, not with this reboot, with a with a Quentin Tarantino Star Trek movie, with all the backlash about the Klingons and Discovery, this will be like Paramount's way to kind of like get back in good with the fans, especially the ones that hate the JJ universe, especially the ones that hate the Discovery Klingons. They could bring back Klingons that look like they do in you know, TNG, give them the long flowing hair and all that stuff, and give us a Klingon story.
I just don't think these Hollywood producers, either for Discovery or for the JJ universe, I think they're departing. That horse has left the stable a long time ago. They're not going back.
Not going back to what?
To the old look of Klingons. Maybe they will, but I really don't see it happening.
Well, I mean, even in Into Darkness, the Klingons who were still wearing their helmets had long hair. They just, the one who happened to take his helmet off was bald. But if during that pan, you saw them with the long hair. Sure. I mean, that's the only thing that really bothered me about the Klingon in Into Darkness, that he was bald. I loved how tribal he looked and how weird he looked with all the piercings. I'm like, I could see they look like a Klingon biker gang. I mean, why not? Why not have a bunch of piercings in your ridges?
Right.
But I mean, like, if they're gonna do a rated R Star Trek movie, it needs to be because it's violent. Especially if Quentin Tarantino's doing it. Quentin Tarantino's like king of violence. So let's do a Klingon story. And it's especially since the reboot universe has been hinting at a Klingon story since the 2009 movie. They keep talking about the tensions are high with the Klingons. Beyond came out of nowhere, went in a completely different direction for no reason. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's the best of the three movies. But it's weird because it's totally removed from the other two films as far as like any kind of references. It's almost a standalone movie. It doesn't feel like a continuation the way Into Darkness did to the first one.
I don't know. Beyond seemed like they're trying to do more of Star, the Enterprise being a ship of Discovery, but then discovering that they've boldly gone where somebody else has gone before. But
sure.
But whatever. My thing is, no matter what happens, if it's Quentin Tarantino or then whoever they get after, or if he doesn't get picked as director and somebody else is,
fans will be mad. No matter who it is, fans will be mad.
Fans are gonna find something to get pissed off at, and then they're just gonna shit on it one way or the other.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are upset that Quentin Tarantino's in, and the people are upset that it's gonna be rated R. And I'm like, Discovery's kind of rated R in some of the episodes.
A lot of people don't like Discovery being rated R. A lot of people don't like that. I don't hate Discovery for, taking on adult, subjects or in depicting them adult-like. But, one thing that kind of is sad for me is that I can't share them with my kids.
Yeah.
That's kind of, it's just the world we live in, Like, I thought about, Stranger Things. Like, oh, that would be a great show to show my son. But I was like, there's a lot of stuff that's really not age appropriate, not yet. Maybe in another 5 years or so,
three or 4 years.
But it's just one of those things. It's like a lot of stuff is bent towards, I don't know. It used to have like everything had a balance. Like it would be a little bit edgy for the adults, but not so much that the kids couldn't watch it.
That was like the 90s though. In the 90s where they were trying really hard to be edgy, but they were like not really that edgy, but they were pretending to be.
Well, like the Goonies, geez, man. Like you see that now and you're like, man, there's a lot of like, I don't think that movie get made for kids these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it was made nowadays, it'd be more like Stranger Things.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. But anyways, interesting. Interesting to see if Quentin Tarantino would have anything to do with a Star Trek movie. That if you would have told me that 10 years ago, I wouldn't even believe you.
Honestly, like I've been waiting for Quentin Tarantino to break out of his regular genres because, he does the modern thing so well. He does the Western thing really well. Let's try. I've told my brother this, Josh. You've heard his emails before in previous episodes. Mm-hmm. Like I just really want to see Quentin Tarantino do like a sci-fi movie. I'd love to see him do sci-fi. I never would have guessed that the sci-fi movie that he might get to do would be Star Trek. But there's actually a podcast he was on. I don't know the name of the podcast. I just came across just a snippet of it on YouTube like months ago. And in it, he was talking about how he'd probably like to do a Next Generation episode, like a Yesterday's Enterprise, and make that into like a two-hour long movie.
Yeah.
But this was like way before any of the announcements. But I was like, oh, that's interesting. I actually posted that YouTube video on one of the Quentin Tarantino threads on Synthaholics group.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he could do it. I don't think that's out of his wheelhouse because I think he's just a really great director. If he has the right production crew behind him, which J.J. Abrams probably has already assembled.
And he writes – I love Quentin Tarantino dialogue usually. I really enjoy the banter, and they just got to get someone in there to help, you know, write, you know, Technobabble into the dialogue with him. And then you've got some like kind of interesting – you know, Tarantino-esque Star Trek, and I think that'd be kind of fun, especially like Kirk and Spock going at it, like with a Quentin Tarantino writing behind it. That'd be kind of fun, or Spock and Bones.
And it'd be fun to see what kind of obscure music that he picks from
his, Japan.
From his library of music. You know, he always picks these, you know, kind of unknown songs at the time, and then they become huge hits after the movie.
Yeah, because the movie soundtrack blows up. Yeah, I bought the Kill Bill soundtrack because it had some really great stuff on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, all those things. A lot of those songs that came out were not big songs at the time until, you know, till much later. So it's cool.
And we have the president for classical music in Star Trek Beyond.
The president for classical music.
Yeah, they used the classical music to blow up the ships.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they call the whatever, I can't remember the band's name off the top of my head, but yeah, it's classical music.
Beastie Boys.
Oh, yeah, Beastie Boys, they're classical music, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's classical music.
And it'd be nice to hear a band other than the Beastie Boys in a Star Trek movie, just FYI, guys. We've had the Beastie Boys in all three of the Star Trek reboots. Let's do something new.
Yeah, we have. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, just so apparently the Beastie Boys is the only band that actually existed in the Star Trek universe.
So weird. That one song.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, I guess we're going to shift gears majorly now to our topic at hand.
Yeah, we're doing the theme.
Yeah, so I had this thought after our last episode with Janeway and Equinox.
Because he hated it so much.
Well, it's the Prime Directive more than anything. We talked a lot about Captain Ransom breaking the Prime Directive, and then Janeway, stuff that she did. And we were kind of talking about like who would break the Prime Directive more. And I thought like we need to kind of dive into Prime Directive. And Prime Directive... as a subject is a very deep well.
You know, I looked for YouTube videos to do some research this week. You know, I looked through like some forums. Aaron linked me some things, and some people try to touch it. Not much in video though. I haven't seen any good videos on the Prime Directive, and I looked, and even some of the forums, they kind of die off really fast.
Yeah, because I don't think there's a lot. I mean, obviously there's enough information to talk about it briefly, but not to get yourself in trouble. But we're not afraid of getting ourselves in trouble.
Trouble's our middle name.
Yes. All the time. So
Synthaholics Trouble Podcast.
Trouble loves us. So we're going to touch this hot button and maybe suss out all the good, the bad, and the just doesn't work. Sorry, people. So...
Yes, indeed.
There's a lot of that with Prime Directive.
And this may take more than one episode, so and they may not be concurrent episodes.
Yeah, we probably have to revisit this a couple times. So, so the Prime Directive, known as Starfleet General Order 1, is the non-interference directive, and it's embodiment of one of Starfleet's most important ethical principles, a non-interference with other cultures and civilizations. And at its core, it was the philosophical concept that covered personnel should refrain from interfering in the natural, unassisted development of societies, even if the interference was a well-intentioned. So the Prime Directive is viewed as it was so fundamental to Starfleet that officers swore to uphold the Prime Directive even to the cost of their own lives and the cost of their crew. So that's a powerful statement. If you're going to lose a crew of, you know, 500...
Or a thousand in the space of a galaxy class, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's a lot for an ideal. And it seems like non-interfering, it seems like it'd be pretty easy to not interfere and not die. Just don't go places. But Star Trek's all about going places.
Well, that's the other thing is like going. Yeah, I mean, anywhere you go and any place you have contact with, you're somewhat altering that civilization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, leaving anything behind. I mean,
a conversation behind. Just walking on a planet's surface could somehow alter things that you don't even think of.
And leaving your dead behind, like for instance in Voyager, we talked about the episode "Everyone Do the Dinosaur." They found like these people. They found like bones and part of a uniform of someone who died on a planet that they just left behind. Thanks, Janeway. Apparently, she didn't belong to the branch of the military where no man gets left behind.
Well, but not just that. But let's say even. It's that body, let's say, is, you know, buried or whatever, and it's there for a long time. What happens if their archaeologists come looking through and they find that body?
Which is exactly what happened, except this body wasn't buried. It was kind of just left out.
Right. But, you know, it's like that alters that civilization all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't leave any dead behind unless they've been, like, vaporized. Like, there's no remains.
Yeah,
even your remains could, you know, if there's any living biological matter, like, you know, any viruses or stuff that may just be dormant in your body, I mean, that could mess up an ecology.
Yeah, I mean, even your personal physical biome of your being, just being in contact with anything else could alter things. Like, you know, who knows? You walk around, maybe, you know. You touch something and that you know, some bacteria from you gets onto that thing and that, you know, introduces a whole new bacterium to that planet.
Yeah, I mean, the non-interference directive is really, really vague, and it's invoked sometimes and not other times. And it's kind of annoying because it's like, well, I wish they would explain it. And the thing is, they've gone out of the way, and Voyager... specifically the episode Infinite Regress, that we discovered the Prime Directive is a complicated order, and it has 47 suborders by the latter part of the 24th century.
And what are those 47 suborders?
We don't know.
But we do know a couple things. It says that the directive provides guidance on the directive provided guidance on what constitutes prohibitive interference with society, covering matters such as providing knowledge of other inhabited worlds, even if individuals or governments in society were already aware of such. So that's one. Another one is providing knowledge of technologies or science. So like handing someone a phaser or warp technology or, you know, that don't have that.
Replicators or
flintlock
holodecks.
Weapons.
Yeah, even something like flintlock weapons. That'd be crazy.
Another one is taking actions to generally affect society's overall development. So, you know, changing where that society is going. If they don't see things going correctly in that society, or you see they're going into a bad way, you're trying to steer their society a different direction. Kirk did that all the time. Taking actions would support one faction within the society over another. So we saw that in the Next Generation, Too Short of a Season, where the Admiral gets called and he gets younger and younger. And he basically started a 40-year war with these two factions on this planet years ago. So he broke the Prime Directive there. Helping society escape the negative consequences of its own actions. So, again, like the Voyager time and again, where they get sent back in time, Paris and Janeway. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to fix that stupid the plant reactor. I don't know what the...
But that array that they're keep having to go to.
Right. Helping a society escape natural disaster known to the society, even if the inaction would result into a society's extinction. Probably the biggest is Star Trek Into Darkness in the very beginning of that, where Spock puts that cold fusion thing into the volcano from destroying that society.
Also, and even more recently, is exactly the same thing in the first episode of Discovery, the Vulcan Hello, Philippa and Michael, you know, opening up the well.
Yeah. Like, why? And then another one's subverting or avoiding the application of that society's law. So a perfect example is Next Generation Justice, where Wesley Crusher is...
Let him die! Killed.
When he's destined to be killed.
He won't get diddled by the Traveler if you let him die.
Yeah. And then also interfering with the internal affairs of society. And there's a whole lot of different examples of how that has been kind of tampered with in all sorts of Star Trek. So any thoughts on these talking points, Dave?
So that gives us about 8 examples of maybe the 47 suborders.
Yeah. Maybe 8. Yeah.
I just would love, like, if this was like in canon somewhere, just like have it written out or in some kind of appendix somewhere. Just it'd be kind of fun just to dig into it, because I'm sure the thing is, the Prime Directive is such a broad use it or don't type thing in Star Trek. It's kind of there to make a moral dilemma or not, depending on what they're going for in the episode.
Yeah, it's a plot. It's a plot driver.
It's literally a plot device. So it'd be nice to see like how different things, you know, interact and what causes them, you know, what causes one rule to break another rule or to supersede another rule, like an order of operations, really, on, mm-hmm. on how the Prime Directive works. Because usually just get the main two: don't interfere, and with a non-war culture, and don't take sides. Those are the two that we usually hear about most specifically. When the Prime Directive is evoked. And usually in the 23rd century, like, saving a planet from extinction seems like captains are way more willing to do that in the 23rd century than they were in the 24th century, given, you know, Picard and Sharjanka. He's like, no, we're not going to do it. Then they decide to do it, you know, to fix the volcanoes on the planet with Data's pen pal.
It definitely seems that Starfleet Command gives their captains and officers a little bit of leeway. Even though they're not, it's supposed to be a cut and dry kind of thing, it does seem that they give them over and over again sort of like a berth of how you're going to interpret that and if you're going to somewhat ignore the Prime Directive. And then secondly, there's two things. One, in the original series, Prime Directive is definitely put, you know, is talked about more than once, but I don't think it was completely hammered out what the Prime Directive was. Well, I think by the time we got to Next Generation, by the first season, I think the Prime Directive was pretty well ironed out what Gene Roddenberry meant by it.
Sure, yeah. I think I mentioned this when we did our episode on Justice. I feel like Justice in particular, they were really trying to like flesh out more of what the Prime Directive was. Mm-hmm. And so they're building stories around it. And I think they even did that a little bit in how terrible the episode was, Code of Honor. They're trying to like build up what the Prime Directive is early in season one to kind of flesh that out a little bit. Because, you know, it is very vague in TOS, even though they do evoke it. But in TNG, they're really trying to like, here, this is a set of rules that the Federation abides by. And the rules have gotten way stricter, apparently, in the 24th century.
Yeah, exactly. It has changed quite a bit. So, like, in the first season, definitely Justice, too short a season, Symbiosis, and Pen Pals seem to be, like, the ones that really stick out to me right off the bat for the first TNG. And I think you can see them trying.
And in Pen Pals, that's one where I feel like that's one that shouldn't have even been a violation. I mean, like, if you're not... I don't know. I mean, turning the world into a lava world doesn't do anyone any favors. I mean,
But the idea is, with extinction, is a natural part of civilization as well. So, just like, you know, birth is a natural part of life, so is death. You know, sooner or later we're all going to die, and we have to face that fact. And
well, yeah, that's on the micro basis. Macro things, I mean, all civilizations are going to try and keep themselves alive as long as possible. I mean, we as a people, I mean, Stephen Hawking keeps telling us we need to colonize Mars, colonize another planet, because the Earth's not going to be here forever. As a people, we're going to try to keep ourselves around as long as possible. We're going to try and fight extinction in the background, although our governments are probably trying to make us go extinct with some of the shit they've been trying to pull lately. But in general, like the scientific and, you know, outside of, you know, governments being stupid, we're trying to seed ourselves out into the universe. We want to. NASA's got a mission to Mars, and so does SpaceX. Just because someone's not technically advanced enough to seed the stars yet, you're just going to take it. You're going to take away the chance. You're gonna take away their chance to get that far. It's not like they're cows or chickens. Sharzhenko was a sentient being. Her mm-hmm. family, her people, they're sentient beings.
Yeah, but there's a couple things. Like, what if I don't know? I see where you're going with, and I agree with you. And a big part of it is, like, if the planet has something that they could fix, like, let's say Into Darkness, they knew that volcano was going to go off, and that volcano is going to devastate that whole planet, and that, you know, that society would be wiped out, and they're basically a Stone Age society. So even though the movie's over the top, especially with the Enterprise being underwater, I mean, it's crazy, you know, crazy idea to
sure,
do.
But yeah.
if that was not the case, the Enterprise flying out of the ocean and it's just Spock alone in the volcano and stopping that volcano from going off, that still is part of maybe the balance of life. You know, we don't know exactly why things happen for a certain reason. You know, certain planets are just not destined to be to sustain life. And there's been plenty extinction events within our planet alone that brought us to, you know, being. You know, if the dinosaurs didn't extinct, I mean, didn't have extinction eras, how many were there? Like 6 or 7?
I think we're currently in the 6th major extinction currently, if I remember correctly. It's either, it's like you said, 6th or 7th.
Right.
But the dinosaurs was like the 3rd or the 4th mass extinction event, I think.
I mean, well, the last one being obviously when the asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula and killed off the dinosaurs and made the Earth so inhospitable for the dinosaurs that it came, the mammals came to rise. So, I mean, without that, we wouldn't be here as a civilization. So, like, that being said, like, Kirk and Spock, you know, stopping the volcano Into Darkness, maybe the extinction of that race, you know, that sentient, they go away for a while. Maybe something else comes. You know, I mean, so there's lots of different things at play here that
I just don't know. You can't play God and stop everything forever. But if you're there and you're just watching, it just seems sadistic. Like, oh, look, they're going to die.
Well, and there's something else to be said. Here's the other side of it as the argument. Because you're there, you are part of the natural universe itself, you know, just so because, you know, Dave Duncan gets on his spaceship and flies to this planet and sees a planet ready to, you know, go extinct. Dave Duncan decides he's going to stop the extinction by fixing it the way he knows how to, which, you know, maybe your tools make it very easy for you to stop whatever crisis and to avert it. Well, you are part of nature.
I have matches. I will fix your non-fire problem. You will eat this winter, I promise.
Well, but yeah, so you are part of nature, and so is Kirk and Spock, so is Picard, and so is Janeway. So them just being there gives another side of the argument that because they're there and because they're part of the natural organism of the universe, that them being there is not unnatural.
That's true. That's a very good point. Like, because they've progressed to the point, they can intercede. And I understand the Prime Directive makes perfect sense. Don't freak out a culture who's like not warp ready. Cause I mean, that's, you know, that could totally change the political, religious, you know, sense on the planet. And it could, you know, cause, you know, unintended chaos. And that makes sense. And, you know, and like we've been talking about, like, you know, fixing a culture's problem that they don't even know, you know, why it stopped. I mean, that's not a problem. In Sharzhenka, especially in the Pen Pals, they've progressed technologically enough so they can send signals out into space. Like they were asking for help. Like, if they didn't know interstellar species existed, they at least, you know, hypothesized that it did.
And there's some exceptions to it and also inconsistencies, but you know what you're saying there. See, here's the thing, is like, the Prime Directive has a one other thing I think that's important, and I think it makes more sense when it's just us affecting non-warp capable societies. The one, the big thing being is that, like we saw in like in American history, I think the most recent thing there is the cargo cults. I don't know if you're aware of them, that there were, especially World War II, there were certain, you know, islands in the South Pacific that never really came into contact with societies such as, you know, the USA or Australia or Britain. But when they did, they viewed those people as gods, and they actually would wait for the USA as like saviors, sort of a Jesus figure. So they would put certain people up as these like Jesus figures, and they were called cargo cults. It's a very interesting phenomenon, but I think that's originally what Gene Roddenberry was trying to avoid, is that, you know, the Enterprise, Kirk and Spock and McCoy beam down to a planet, they meet people, but then they think that they're gods, or they start copying them because they know that they're from outer space. Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to come in and act like, oh, we're just people from another part of the land. We don't know, you know, we're not from a spaceship.
Yeah, and I think that makes complete sense. I mean, is not interfering with the culture's development makes 100% sense from a, you know, an interference way, but preventing a culture's extinction, I think would be the moral thing to do. And they do that in the TOS era a lot, and then in TNG they're kind of like, well, maybe we shouldn't do that, and I'm like, and they're a little bit wishy washy on it too.
They are wishy washy about it. So. As I said before, the Prime Directive has a lot of exceptions and to allow violations. So the Prime, it says we have here reasons for Prime Directive is applied to a living, growing culture, a culture that wasn't may have been exempt. So two things Kirk did was Return of the Archaeons was when he destroys the computer Landru because they're. Society has become stagnant, and same thing with the Apple when the computer Vol has people under, you know, the society under its thumb, and you know, Kirk destroys both those computers. Kirk loves blowing up computers.
That's Kirk, yeah. About. Kirk hates computers. He is like, I can't believe they had William Shatner like selling one of the computers back in the day. I've seen commercials. It's hilarious. I'm like. You Why would you let this man sell computers? He will talk computers. It to death. William Shatner's the last person you want. I mean, Leonard Nimoy, okay, yeah, because Leonard Nimoy doesn't usually destroy computers, but William Shatner always is trying to break computers.
So those are two examples. So when the culture has become completely stagnant, apparently, especially in Kirk's time, it seemed like that was acceptable.
It's okay to reboot the society once it's become stagnant.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like basically they're just correcting someone else who's broken the Prime Directive, because Vol had to have been put there by, you know, since it was computer, it had to be put there by another sentient race, or it was from a previous culture that, you know, that had died out and gone extinct. I can't remember. I haven't seen the episode. It's got to be one or the other. Aliens or previous culture. So they're basically trying to impose the Prime Directive on the planet that's already had it broken on.
Well, yeah, and Return of the Archaon is – the Archaon was a ship that that disappeared like 100 years ago on the planet Beta 3. And I forgot how exactly happened, but they used the computer systems to kind of set up a system to govern the people. And what they'd have is every once in a while they have like basically a purge on the planet where like if you were out at a certain time, you just lose your mind and could do whatever you wanted and it was acceptable.
The purge, Star Trek style.
Yeah, I mean, it was 1960 purge style. So it was just basically guys, you know, forcibly kissing women and then beating the shit out of each other. So that was that one. So.
Just like Chekhov and that Klingon woman.
Oof, that was rough.
Chekhov had his purge too.
Another reason was cultures already contaminated could be repaired, but the allowed scope of those repairs is unknown. So Peace of the Action is one of those where they're all the gangster planet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an excellent version where they're it was just somebody came down there and messed around with that their society, and they altered it.
Did they leave a book on that planet, or they just decided to be, oh, we're going to all be gangsters, kind of like the Royale?
Yeah, well, like that, yeah, it's very similar. So, you know, who knows? But, I mean, there's lots of reasons for that.
Like someone left Scarface, like, sitting around? And they decided to build their culture on Scarface, which would be hilarious.
That would be pretty darn funny.
yeah, see?
Yeah.
It's my little friend. Yeah, see?
Another one here is a society has sent a general distress call to any spacefaring culture that could be exempt. So pen pals, like you mentioned. Also, there's the one with Miri, which had me completely very confused, because Miri was a strange example. I wasn't sure if that's a breaking of the Prime Directive, since that Miri was a parallel Earth, and it was a parallel society that became stagnant and ready to collapse because of a plague that was put in place over 300 years ago. So are you interfering with your culture or their culture, and how is it a mere planet? You know, I mean, parallel planet. It was very confusing. And there, like I've mentioned to you before we started this show, was, I mean, there had to be a handful of children there that survived the disease. And it was only like maybe 30 kids at most, maybe 50. I mean, they can't repopulate a whole planet race with that.
Yeah, so there's not enough diversity in that genome for that to work. So they're condemning these people to like a bunch of mutants, and then they're just all going to start dying anyway.
Right. So, and because they're a parallel Earth, I mean, they could just integrate into, you know, regular Earth-Terran society.
Abduct them.
Yeah, exactly.
Probe them. Just so they can have the full experience before they get to their destination.
I don't know if you want to probe the children. Next is the society.
Klingons don't allow themselves to be probed.
the society is already new in contact with the Federation. Data Lore is an example of that. Also, Deja Q is another example. So they're seeking assistance through treaties and all sorts of other things, seeking the Federation or Starfleet's assistance. You know,
that's interesting. How would they know unless the Prime Directive was already broken? I guess if the Prime Directive was already broken, it's like, oh well.
Yes, they already know about us, so I guess we have to become involved with them. Another version is a material injustice involving a Federation citizen would occur absent. The interference could only qualify. So, like justice, you know. I mean, Wesley obviously didn't do it willingly, walk into that flower bed. So it was just a silly way for someone to die. It wasn't really justice there.
And there was no justice there, but something they don't mention when it comes to justice, I don't think, or at least not in where we are right now, is that this is a pre-warp, probably pre-spacefaring society injustice.
Right.
Like, all they do is have sex and play patty cake. They haven't been in the space ever. They don't know that their god is a space station, an interdimensional space station.
Mm-hmm. Right,
like,
right.
It's like, how were they allowed to just to go do shore leave on this planet of mostly sort of primitive people? It just, that's a Prime Directive issue right there.
Yeah, that happens too. Well, another version of that, not the same, but the Private Little War, Kirk mentioned that he'd been on that planet before. And the people didn't have flintlock weapons. And then whatever it was, less than 10 years later, they did have flintlock weapons. And obviously that was being supplied by the Klingons. But
Klingons are good at flintlock weapons. Just ask Laurel.
Right. Well, but it's not just that. But, I mean, it's like, first of all, why are you hanging out with on a Stone Age planet, you know, other than I know they were taking scientific readings, but it just seems like, can't you take those scientific readings like away from society? I don't know. It's really bizarre to me. So, justice is a really weird one that was even put into like play.
Yeah, like it's I mean the whole setup of the episode is breaking the Prime Directive. Yeah. And then they make up a thing for, you know, I mentioned this to Jen actually on our Star Trek look back that came out this week. That Star Trek likes generating plot for the convenience to make another plot happen. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're going to make a story about the Prime Directive, but the Prime Directive's already been broken by the setup of the event. And the event, and the example I used there was Insurrection, where they have Data on a Who Watches the Watchers first contact observation type mission with the Sona. Right. And then he goes rogue when he figures out they're trying to, like, take it over.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's just like, why would you ever bring Data on every time Data has been in a first contact situation, it's gone terribly wrong. Data should be as far away from those as possible, especially when it comes to primitive cultures.
Right.
And the reason Data was there makes absolutely no sense. It was there so that plot could happen, so the movie could happen. And Star Trek seems to do this a lot. And, mm-hmm. and Justice is another example of that. It's like, oh, look, it's for plot to happen. And
Well, not just that, Picard, you know, breaks the law by freeing Wesley Crusher, but he also goes ahead and shows the Edo people their god. He's like, "Here's your god. I'm going to bring you up in space," and there he is, right there, that weird assembly of orbiting space stations. So, I mean, it's just a huge what Picard did was hugely messed up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, and then the person knew it was their god, and then the god knew their person was there, and they were about to try to blow up the Enterprise. They're like, ramming speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Beam her down.
Get her off here.
O'Brien, now. He's like beaming up Tasha without her clothes on. That's where the O'Brien at work. That's where this episode came from. Yeah. It's great.
I don't know where that's where it came from. Next, we have the quadrant in which a culture resides has lost a large number of lives. So that was in direct correlation with the Taste of Armageddon. And that's, you know, Kirk was told by Ambassador Fox that, you know, he had to go to the planet there and make contact with them. So, you know, I would say just going to the planet on Taste of Armageddon would definitely make, you know, that they're that they're breaking the Prime Directive, but apparently he got direction to do that. So
yeah, I mean, they had the special, you know, guy there, but I mean, they were somewhat spaced because they were able to target the Enterprise. I mean, I guess it was through video games they were able to target the Enterprise. But something that really sticks out, since we're just mentioning A Taste of Armageddon, is General Order 24. The order, it permits a starship captain, in certain circumstances, to destroy the entire surface of an inhabited planet and thereby eradicate any societies living there. I think this is an amazing order. I don't know if Kirk made it up, like if it was just in his playbook and all his crew knew about it. Because I don't think we've ever heard of General Order 24.
Again,
but I want General 24 to be invoked in Discovery, and I want Lorca to wipe out an entire planet. I just want to see it because Lorca is the type of guy who would do that.
You're ready to take that on, huh?
Yes. If Kirk threatened it, Lorca will do it.
It's actually so. General Order is an order to destroy all life on an entire planet. This order has been given by Captain Garth of Antos 5 or 6 or whatever it is, and Captain Kirk on Emissary 7. So either occasions this order was neither of these occasions were actually fulfilled. So
So it's not just Kirk, so it is in canon for somebody else. That's cool.
To whom gods destroy, and Taste of Armageddon.
And in your theory, if Garth of Izar is
then he already did it,
maybe.
Says,
he'll do it, but he'll say he didn't, because Lorca is just that bad.
So Garth may have explained the spirit of the order when he suggested that he gave the order, because I could say that we are actively hostile towards the Federation, and I guess General Order 24 actually being carried out are in the first issues of the Gold Key Star Trek comic series, The Planet of No Return. And also in the novel of Reap the Whirlwind in the Star Trek Vanguard series. So
interesting.
There's that. That's a weird general order. It's very far from very far.
It seems
from,
very anti. It's like here they should just rename it the Death Star Order.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the Omega Order, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's
Omega Directive.
Yeah, it's just crazy that General Order 24. I want to see Lorca do it. If any captain in Star Trek will be able to carry through that order, it'll be Lorca.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, don't let me down, Lorca.
Or shall we say Garth of Isengard?
Garth of Isengard.
Possibly. Next we have is Society hails or attacks us a Federation vessel. So if that happens, then apparently you can interact with them. Another one is a society previously interfered by a non-Federation citizen, such as the Klingons, that would violate the Prime Directive had it been done by Starfleet personnel. So, like a great example is the original series Private Little War and Voyager's False Prophets with the Ferengi. So, those are two ways that apparently you could interact with that society because the Klingons already did it, or the Ferengi already did it in False Prophets. So
if one of your annoying friends has messed with the culture, then you can go and try and fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, or you can at least try to make things a little bit better.
Although, False Prophets, the Ferengi would have eventually died. Just leave them alone. Like, really, what else would the Ferengi have done, honestly?
I don't know.
I mean, they went through the wormhole in that TNG episode, and they never came back. The wormhole closed. They screwed those guys. I thought it was great that they brought back those Ferengis for false prophets, and then Janeway's got to go and mess up their cushy little life they had set up. I mean, what else would Ferengi do who were lost in space?
They're trying to be happy. That's all they're trying to do. Make some money.
They're just trying to be happy. Make some money. Have like women in bikinis follow them around all the time. I mean, that's the Ferengi life.
Get some umax.
Yeah, umax. Underage you.
Underage. And next, we have another thing is compliance with a specific order that could not be followed if the Prime Directive fully applied. They bring out here, example, an ancillary war with the Federation, first contact missions or diplomatic missions or trade negotiations. So there's a whole bunch of examples of that. Palmoonlight being one of them. Aaron of Mercy from the original series with the Organians. Taste of Armageddon again. So here we have certain reasons because of warfare or something larger happening that the Federation or Starfleet had to act on it. So again, these aren't exactly reasons why you would do them, but these are possibilities of why things could happen. So why you could do things. Another one is rescue missions. As another one example being given is Next Generation Transfigurations. Another thing we have here, society is in diplomatic discussions with the Federation. So, given the example here is a counter at Farpoint. So that society is broaching some kind of, friendship with the Federation.
And they're kind of repeating themselves a little bit because we've already had kind of one where it's like, well, they already are aware of the Federation.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's kind of fuzzy.
Yeah. And then we have lastly here, the society has been contacted by Starfleet, but upon recommendation upon the contact survey team, the planet was nonetheless subject to the Prime Directive as though such contact had not occurred. So that's like Private Little War or First Contact.
First Contact, this is the episode or the movie? Because there is First Contact, the episode, not the movie.
Yeah, the episode. Right, right. So
you got to stipulate that because they decided to name the movie and an episode the same thing.
Yeah, this is the episode.
So people.
So those are those circumstances where the Prime Directive has been bent or could be bent. Not saying that those are all, you know, proper ways of change or altering the Prime Directive, but those have been with things that have happened. We also have, like you said, General Order 24 is a. Seems like the antithesis
of everything Federation.
And then we also have the Omega Directive, which we saw in Voyager, when if there's an Omega particle, they have strict orders to get rid of it and destroy that that technology.
And destroy who's ever developing that technology.
Well, not necessarily destroy the people, but at least get rid of...
Get rid of their work.
Yeah, their work, so they can't repeat it.
It's like Cyberdyne Systems. We must terminate them.
Yes.
Might as well kill them so they don't try and do it again when you leave.
Just blow the whole surface off.
General Order 24, Omega Directive. Let's combine these orders.
But so these are all like really excellent things of like makes you think of there. It's not a very cut and dry general order. And like you said, there's 47 sub directions in that order, but we don't have that all spelled out. And I think it would have been – somebody should have put those together at some point.
It'd be nice if they – yeah. Discovery Compendium. Give us the – well, they wouldn't have all 47 because it was the 24th century where they were fleshed out to be that many.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least maybe Discovery could give us at least 20. Could you give us 20, please, Discovery?
Yeah, I don't know. So – so there's a lot here to kind of like get into, and we want to like delve into this over time as well, to like each episode of how they've broken these all down. But there's quite a bit of all these that it's nuanced enough that make you wonder if the Prime Directive is complete bullshit made up by Gene Roddenberry and then by the writers, or if there's really something to be said about the Prime Directive. So,
I mean, parts of the Prime Directive are great, and they would make complete sense, like you said, for the cargo cults or whatever. That mm-hmm. you know, that way you don't just freak out a culture and just totally alter, you know, just totally alter their, you know, their trajectory. But mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. But like not saving them when you have the opportunity to, that seems not very moral or not very good to do. But yeah, there's a whole lot more to get into. And we do want to have, because we did mention last time about how you asked me how many times Janeway broke the Prime Directive. And so we do want to get a tally eventually, and we're going to compare Voyager, Next Gen, DS9, the other series. The Prime Directive kind of doesn't apply to Enterprise because the Prime Directive hadn't gone into effect, and they were kind of formulating it.
Yeah, the episode Dear Doctor, they kind of start getting into it. But they, as you said, the Prime Directive was not put in place, so we can't really put that onto, you know, Captain Archer's shoulders. But at a cursory glance, it does seem like Kirk breaks the Prime Directive quite a bit. And for the three seasons that's there, and just what he bumps into and what he, you know, does with his command decisions definitely seems like he does a lot of things that are...
So what we're saying is if Kirk had gone for a full seven seasons, he might be the king.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, one thing I haven't sussed out completely everything on Janeway, but a lot of Janeway's interactions with the Kazon and the societies surrounding the Kazon definitely has impacts on the Prime Directive, but I don't know how Discovery could extract itself from that other than what it did originally in the Caretaker episode. So,
oh, you mean Voyager? You said
Discovery. Oh, yeah. Did I say Discovery? I'm sorry.
I was like, what?
What? They were with the Kazon?
That's interesting. I want to see Lorca beat on some Kazon skeleton next to the Gorn skeleton.
Oh, he would have a field day with them. but yeah, with Voyager, with the Caretaker, I mean, they could have stopped the whole thing by Janeway not protecting the Ocampa in that very first episode.
Oh, yeah, and she could have sent her whole crew back the same day by not destroying the array.
I mean, it really is questionable why that – I mean, here we have a Prime Directive, something that she shouldn't break, and yet she went and – did that just because she felt bad for these people.
And then again, we have Star Trek generating plot, so the whole rest of the series can happen.
Yeah. And what's even worse is the Ocampo only lived 3 years, so they don't have much long time, you know, generations to really remember who she is. So,
oh yeah, like it's really like by the time she gets, you know, because the whole premise of Voyager's BS, 70 years to get back to the Alpha Quadrant. But you know, if we're given that it's not BS, in 70 years, Janeway would be a legend at best, if not right. completely forgotten, and by the Okapan people, since they only lived for three or four years at a time. No, Kes was three. I think they only lived about 7 years. So 70 years would be seven generations of people. Yeah. So at that point, like, she would be a legend if she was remembered at all. Like, it would be such a wild story.
It'd be like us talking about Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, you know, or something, you know, like...
Or George Washington or something like that. It's so far back, you'd be like, well, that's cool, but...
Odysseus.
Well, Odysseus is really going for it. But, I mean, it's possible, and, you know, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, because according to the first Traveler episode, it should only take 7 years for Voyager to get back. But that's one generation, and they'd still be remembered, sort of.
Sure, absolutely. But that being said, it's just, you know, she could have, you know, subverted all that terrible... I don't know. I'd be pretty angry at Janeway, I guess I gotta say, if I was a crew member.
Oh, they should have... Like, that should have been, like, most of the first season, like, a mutiny story. That could have been fun. Even, like, it's like the Maquis and the Federation hate each other, but they hate Janeway even more for getting them stranded.
Right.
So exactly. that kind of... And that would have made the Maquis and the Federation come together because in their hate against Janeway...
Yeah,
it could have united them, and it could have made that arc a little bit different. Because I mean, even that as a plot device, the Maquis versus Federation, that dries up really fast.
Oh, you know, yeah,
on its own, and it's like that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it could have been a cooler story that they could have you know fleshed out more with the Maquis and the Federation and that whole area.
I know you guys hear me rag on Voyager a lot, and Aaron tries to not rag on it as much because I do the brunt of that. But I think my problem with Voyager is that it's got such a great premise. You know, being far away from home, it's going to take years to get back. Not 70, but it's going to take years to get back at maximum warp. Like, it's a great premise for doing new and different things. And I feel like they totally squandered it.
I think there's, like, you know, you've brought this up more than once, is the political differences on Voyager with the Maquis and the Federation should have been more pronounced. Voyager should have been like completely held together by duct tape by the time it got back to Earth. We should have seen huge rifts. Just when we talked about the Equinox episodes, part one and two, it would have been great to see Chakotay and Janeway at each other's throats constantly and hating on each other.
You know, honestly, it would have been great to see, like, Ransom try to win Janeway over. Like, hey, we need to do this to get back home. We're both in the same boat. Like, that never happened. He was trying to subvert her the entire time, and I'm like, why? You're literally both in the same situation.
Same situation. Why don't you pool your resources? Forget your ship. We can, if you want to share that information with Janeway or not, whatever, you know. But Voyager is clearly a better ship.
Or they should have just fixed the ship, because I mean, they can do it. Voyagers looked as bad or worse. It's not like it's impossible. I mean, it should be impossible realistically, but given the canon of Voyager and its. And the way it's set up, they've come back from worse as far as for fixing the ship. So why wasn't the Equinox able to come back from worse? Just take a week and fix it.
Yeah, true.
I mean, absolutely. It's just Equinox is a huge missed opportunity. There's so many things they could have done. They could have started with, you know, Janeway and Ransom trying to win Janeway over and have this thing, or where he's starting to win part of her crew over. That could have been a thing too, where he's like, seducing her crew away to his, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, look, we've got this way. And, you know, there could have been like we were talking last week, like a 5 or 6 episode arc.
Well, yeah. But that all being said, Voyager had a lot of potential and there's still some great points to it. Just like Equinox.
Voyager has some really great episodes. It does. But as a general, it just missed the mark to me.
Well, like Equinox 1 and 2 from our last episode, we both said it could have been a phenomenal two-parter, and it just fell a little short on a lot of stupid things that could have been, if you just rewrit it, you know, re-edited it and changed a little bit, it would have been totally, it would have been kick-ass.
Yeah, absolutely.
But back to, back to the Prime Directive, going back to, with everything with Voyager, is that Janeway... It gets involved with the Delta Quadrant's politics just by flying through all these people's territories. It's like, you know, you're trying to get to point A to point B and you're cutting through all these people's yards. You know, you're jumping fences and you're trying to get through. And people are going to get pissed off. Some people are going to be like, what are you doing through my yard? Well, I'm trying to get home. All right, no problem. Some people are going to be fine
with
it.
Well, that's a really interesting point because Voyager is both almost every single new alien they meet, it's a first contact episode and potentially violating the Prime Directive because but I mean, if they're already face-faring civilizations, you're not necessarily breaking the Prime Directive, but you are having a ton of first contact.
Yes, and the problem is with the Prime Directive, the new version of it, especially when we get to Voyager at this point, is that the Prime Directive means any way you're altering society or that civilization, you know, by your actions. So it gets really, really hard to even, you know, talk to somebody. I mean, if I come and I talk to somebody on the street, you know, I have altered their day.
Yeah.
You know, so... I mean, it's hard. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to really.
The Prime Directive in the 24th century does seem a little bit silly with some of the ways it's implied to, you know, implied to work.
And the Prime Directive, to me, makes the most sense to civilizations that are pre-warp. You know, so, you know, if maybe they're, you know, interplanetary with their solar system and they could send out long-range ships, but they're like sleeper ships or something like that. That makes sense to me.
Maybe like that should be General Order 1. General Order 2 should be about like just general politics when it comes to, you know, meeting other space-faring civilizations. Because it seems unfair to lump General Order 1 as both what your context, you know, what your conduct is for non-space-faring civilizations and your space-faring civilizations being under the same general order. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that's like apples and, you know, space fruit.
Apples and space fruit.
It's like apples and space tardigrades that fly through. You know, it's so different, and it's such a different set of, you know, it's such a different set of expectations.
Yeah.
It's hard to even compare a non-space, you know, a primitive civilization to an advanced civilization. It's not even fair to put your General Order 1 in respect to both, because there should be one specifically for your primitive and then another set of rules for your, you know, diplomatic, already spacefaring civilizations.
That's an excellent point, Dave. Actually, I think you should have been in those writer rooms and talked to Roddenberry. I mean, I think Prime Directive works best for pre-warp civilizations, and then make a General Order 2, whatever you want to call it, and that being, you know, don't get involved with the politics or the, you know, whatever the internal mechanisms of that society.
Or don't take sides with alien races that you aren't already allied to. Because, I mean, the Federation, you know, if they're allied with the Klingons, they should be able to support Klingons and Klingon matters. But they don't. But, I mean, I feel like alliances, like, between major organizations should hold water. Mm-hmm. Like, you should be able to support them. But, you know, they didn't support them during the Klingon Civil War, which happened. But it's kind of hard to play favorites. So I understand them staying out of an internal affair. But if they're at war with, you know, the Cardassians, I don't know, it's complicated.
It's very complicated, and it gets to a point is that you're going to be breaking the Prime Directive all over the place. So you need to sort of make two different rules for that. It makes the most sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
But I can understand like not taking sides in a issue where there's two alien races that you have no affiliation for. Like that's really changing the outcome of things if you're taking sides when you're not already an ally of them. They're both, you're neutral to both of them. It's unfair to take sides there. But if you're already an ally with someone, you kind of should take sides. At some point. I mean, not universally, but at some point you should take sides, I think. So mm-hmm.
I agree.
Interesting. I wish we had someone who was like, you know, going out like, you know, foreign relations, because this is, you know, it's essentially a foreign relations subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Federation is constantly coming up against different alien civilizations. I mean, the whole idea is to boldly go and make contact with, you know, new life, new civilizations. And well,
that seems to be the antithesis to General Order 1, don't interfere.
Right, yeah, exactly. Like,
am I supposed to boldly go or am I supposed to boldly watch?
Right, exactly. So which is it?
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know. It is interesting, and I don't totally disagree with the Prime Directive. I just think that the later iteration of it gets a little bit lost, and it becomes way too complicated to apply. And again, I think where it really gets hard to apply is when we get into the next generation. Roddenberry was given a second chance at Star Trek. And he revised the Prime Directive, made it more robust, and this is where it got more complicated.
Yeah, and if, like I said, if we had those 47 rules laid out, it'd be interesting to read them, to go over them, and to see, you know, how it works together. Because, you know, if it's a, like, you know, any bureaucracy with lots of rules, there's gonna be contradicting rules. Or exceptions that only apply in certain cases. It'd be interesting to see what those cases were.
Yeah, no, it would be. I would just like to see the subsections of the Prime Directive, the 47, kind of spelled out, and just to have a good idea.
Yeah, me too. It might make sense, and you know, maybe once we get into more specific things on people breaking the Prime Directive in a future Prime Directive episode, you know, maybe. Maybe these instances where we're going to, you know, say, oh, look, they broke their Prime Directive for sure. Maybe they didn't because of one of the subsections. We don't know. But we have to – but, you know, going forward, we're going to have to go on with what knowledge that we are given.
Yeah, exactly. So, Internet, if you have some creative writing and you like to write regulations for, you know, organization that doesn't exist.
Do we have any fanfic Prime Directive rules?
You know what? I not Prime Directive. I was looking under General Orders, under Memory Beta, and they didn't really have anything much different for what was already spelled out. I mean, other than different stuff that was through novels and stuff like that, and all sorts of other outside Star Trek TV shows and movies. So, but they don't go too far with it.
Yeah, they don't get any extra. Yeah. Any extra insight. But the Prime Directive, we've had actually Andrew Dumais asked us to do this years ago. So you're welcome, Andrew. We're finally tackling Prime Directive. And if any of you, and if any of you guys, the listeners, if any of you guys have any insights or knowledge or, you know, favorite websites that go into this, let us know. Or if you've got insights, email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. We'd love to read your thoughts on the Prime Directive, too. We can make this more of a discussion between everyone. If you guys email us your thoughts or email us some audio clips, we can maybe just do a whole Prime Directive episode just talking about what your guys' thoughts are on the Prime Directive. That would be super interesting to me to hear what you guys are thinking as well.
Absolutely. Well, and then just if you want to shoot us an email and let us know, like, hey, remember this episode? You know, they broke the Prime Directive, or this part of the Prime Directive never made any sense to me. You know, so there's a ton of things to talk about for Prime Directive. And we, like we said, we want to get back into it and talk more about the Prime Directive and maybe make a scoring rank of who is the worst and who's the best, and maybe break into some of the reasons between all the episodes that we come in contact with the Prime Directive. So,
and right now we've just gone over a cursory, you know, this is the Prime Directive and these are some of the exceptions to the rule and some of the inconsistencies. We've only gone over a little bit of what this topic has to offer. We hope you've liked this first dive into it for Prime Directive Part 1.
Yeah, we want to get into do some more, and I think I it's actually pretty interesting, and I think us talking about it, Dave, I think it's going to increase just our knowledge of Trek as it is too. When we delve into any episodes in the future, it'll be like, well, you know, we'll know exactly about the Prime Directive and its structures and what's allowed and what's not allowed.
Yeah, like talking about this will make us a little bit more focused. It's like, oh, yeah, they messed up there. And they didn't even say Prime Directive in this episode, which does happen from time to time, where it's like, oh, that seems like a violation, but they didn't even mention it.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely email us your thoughts about the Prime Directive. We'd love to read them on the air and make this a bigger conversation, because we always love everyone's opinion on Star Trek, because it's more than just me and Aaron. I know that's who you listen to, and, you know, guests when we have them on, but we love to hear from you, the listener as well. So,
last episode before this, we did Equinox Part 1 and 2 and compare and contrast Lorca with Captain Ransom because of one of our listeners. We'd love to get those suggestions and tackle that. So if you have something you want us to get into, definitely let us know.
Absolutely. Our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. The rest of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find at Synthaholic Duo. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And our website is, of course, synthaholics.com. You can tweet me personally at David_J_Duncan.
And you can tweet me at Blackbird2004. And hey, if you get a chance, go on to Apple iTunes. You can rate and review us, preferably 5 stars, and give us a nice little comment there that helps us being seen by more people. And if you have a little bit of money you could throw our way, we have the Patreon set up. We have Synthaholics over at patreon.com/Synthaholics that you could throw us a buck a month. It's not much to ask just to keep our one lonely light going on in our closet where we record.
Absolutely. That'd be a huge help to us keeping the show going with all the monthly costs that we do incur. And it's just greatly appreciated. And it'll hopefully help us get out to more conventions to see you guys in person. And that's just so much fun to get to see you guys. And lately we've been mostly relegated to local cons, but it's great meeting people and talking to people about Star Trek at the cons.
Absolutely. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. Bam, ba, da, ba. Prime Directive Part 1.